From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 25th day of September. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner, and I'll update you on the latest in the agricultural news. The closing market report is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago. December corn today down a half cent, $3.74 a quarter. The settlement March at $3.85 and a half unchanged. May at $3.93 a quarter higher, and July up a half at $3.98 and a half. Next year's December up a penny and a quarter at $4.04 and three quarters. November beans down 5 cents, $8.89 and a quarter. The settlement price January 4 and a half lower at $9.03 and a quarter. The March at $9.15 down four, and July beans three lower at $9.33 and a half. Next year's November, $9.42 and a half down 2 and three quarters. Bean oil 16 cents lower. The bean meal down $2.20. Wheat futures 4 and a half lower at $4.77 and a quarter. And the lead December, the soft red May, rather July at $4.93 down 5 and a quarter. And July hard red 0.75 cents lower at the end of the day, settled $4.37 and a quarter. Live cattle futures October 87 and a half cents higher for the day. Feeders up 32 and a half in the lead, and October lean hogs $2.57 and a half cents higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average about 147 points higher at this hour. The energies trading crude oil at $56.13 a barrel, down a buck 16. Ethanol futures 6 cents higher. Heating oil or diesel fuel down about 2 cents, and gasoline off by 3 cents. Wholesale trade there around $1.61 per gallon. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Hey, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. Can you start with those support and resistance levels for me this week, please?
I sure can. They really haven't changed very much. On December, we have support at 352, 314, and 288. Resistance at 392. Actually, there's a gap that goes from 388 up to 392 and three quarters. And so that would definitely be first major resistance and a first target if we get a positive report on Monday, 415 and then 439. March, support 371, 323, 305. Resistance, $4, 425, and 448. When we look at beans, November, 851 for support, 815 and 784, and resistance at $9, 955, and 986. You look at March, support 839, 780, and 716, and resistance at 914, 962, and 997. Now, these are on a monthly continuous chart, so you know these are major and more long-term than your daily chart would show you.
You mentioned the quarterly grain stocks report. I'll come back to that in just a moment. Has managed money been moving around in anticipation of that report or after this last WASDE report?
Well, it's been moving a lot, Todd. I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting because soft spring wheat right now, they're 18,000 short. They've just been vacillating in that particular one. I don't think they know what they want to do there. Corn is 160,000 short, so they've increased their shorts in corn. They've decreased their shorts in beans. They're only 42,000 short right now. Short 54,000 of soy meal. And now they're long 21,000 of soy oil. And so, you know, they are definitely moving around. I mean, when you see some of the stuff that goes on the board, so many times, you know, people think that everything is related just directly to the commodity itself. And a lot of times what it is just strictly money movement and reallocation. We go through all of that when we start to get to this time of year and into the new crop year.
Speaking of the commodity itself, have you heard any yields?
Oh, I have. You know, it's varying all over the place. Most of the people are fairly disappointed on the early bean yields, even if the beans are planted early. It appears that in some of the areas where the biggest disappointment is where it's really dry, you know, and the beans just kind of shut down. So they didn't get a chance to really reach their potential. And, of course, I really hope that everybody's recognizing that when you're seeing some of the comparisons here, there are people who are comparing it to last year. Last year was a record year for both corn and beans. And so when you see some things like down 23%, down 25%, just keep in mind that that's a comparison to last year, which was just extraordinarily big. A lot of guys are having a hard time getting any high moisture corn in. There's dry areas right now where it's coming in at 24 to 26%, where it normally would be 28 to 32%. You know, so that's not good news for people who put away high moisture corn. The rain in the north has been unbelievable. I talked to my brother last night. They've had 8 inches of rain in the past week. And I know when I was up in Minnesota, in one night, Mason City got 5 inches of rain. So, you know, they're happy, I guess, that it's coming right now in Wisconsin because they're behind, so they're not doing silage at the moment. And so, therefore, it hasn't hurt them as bad as it would in a normal year. But they just seem to just have rain continuing and continuing and continuing. So we're going to have to see if that's a pattern that, you know, develops across the entire northern Midwest.
The grain stocks report due out Monday. You have any references there?
Oh, as always, yes, I certainly do. I looked back to a year ago because I kind of wanted to see just how much of a drop on average when you look at the overall averages. I know what I think, but I'd like to look at everybody else too. The average guess for wheat was 2.318 coming in. Last year it was 2.39. So, you know, it shows just slightly better usage this year than what it was last year. On corn, the average guess is 2.428, kind of in line with what the USDA report showed us. Last year we were at 2.14. So that would show about 280 million less in usage. I don't know if that's right or not, to be honest with you. I think it could even be a little bit tighter than that. On soybeans, the average guess is 982, and last year we were at 438 million. That 982 basically is still using the same amount of beans, 771 million that we would have sold last year during this period. And you know, we were already in the trade situation last year. The demand was already down for us, and so it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. To me, this is the most important report that there is, primarily because it shows where grain is actually located, as well as you know, as well as how much is out there. I have been talking to the USDA because I would like to see them be able to tell us how much of the grain that's actually sitting in farmers' bins is already sold to the commercial. And they're going to try, but that's not an easy thing to achieve, I can tell you that much.
A small grain summary is also due out on that day. Anything that you're looking forward to there?
Well, when I look at the wheat crop, you know, they're saying that the average production is about 1.968, and not too many changes there. All winter wheat 1.3. You know, it's one of those situations where if you look at the comparisons to what we saw in August on the USDA report, it's almost identical. So, like always, there's just not too much to talk about when it comes to that.
Well, let's switch back to corn and soybeans. Corn in particular, we talked a little bit about yields. Have you been watching some of the numbers that have come in from some of the tours that have been out recently?
One of the tours that I really like to pay attention to is Premier Co-op. Always does a tour every year down in the Champaign area, and it actually covers quite a large area. I mean, it goes north of Champaign up to Fisher and south down to Bonneville and all around Champaign. So it isn't just in Champaign itself, but they've been doing it since 2012. And when they came out with their numbers this year, I thought, you know, I'm going to take a look at this because, you know, that is a high production area that they're looking at. How does this compare to what the state came in, what the number was for the state that particular year? And so when I did all the numbers, basically, the state came in at about 93.7% of what the Premier Co-op for the Champaign area showed. So this year they came in at 188. So if that would hold true, it would put us at 176, which is 4 bushels lower than where the USDA has us at right now. If I do the Olympic average, Todd, where I throw out the high and the low, then that puts that yield down at 174.5. So it'll be interesting. There was a year where the state actually came in at 105% above what the Champaign area was. So everything depends upon the weather, but I thought this would be an interesting way to try and look at this and see if there's anything that correlates. So we'll find out when we get done.
Do you have anything else on some of the other states in the Midwest?
Well, I've got some trend line situations here. We've been watching the trend line comparisons for the whole year. And when you look at corn, of course, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Minnesota, they've been in the below trend line for corn for the entire year. And at the moment, we have 38% of all our total acres are below trend line, which leaves us 25.6% at trend line, and we've got 28.2% that are above trend line. But the above trend lines are like, Colorado, Kentucky. Nebraska is above trend line, and so is North Dakota. And it's going to be interesting because North Dakota, they're saying we could see some pretty cold temperatures coming in the beginning of October. So it depends upon how far everything is up there. When you look at soybeans, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, all in the below trend line. That's 34.5% of the acres. We've got 44% in at trend line, and then 16% above trend line. And those are states like Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, and again, Nebraska, Tennessee, and Wisconsin. So, it's interesting to watch this thing evolve. You know, a lot of times over the years as I've watched it, you'll see some states move from one category to the next, and this year we have had very little movement at all.
And finally, anything on the global front?
Oh, yeah. Well, Argentina, just get down on your hands and knees and say, thank you, God, that you don't live there. I can tell you that much, because the residents right now are doing the same thing they did, 18 years ago, lining up to withdraw their money from the banks. They've withdrawn $6 billion so far. And the government actually had to go to the Federal Reserve and get another $4 billion just so the banks didn't run out and the people didn't totally go crazy. That's exactly what happened the last time. They're in danger of defaulting on $115 billion in foreign currency bonds right now. And it was just 18 years ago that they defaulted on $100 billion. They've received more than 30 IMF aid packages over the last 60 years, and they've only been around like 70 years that they've been actually involved with this. And you got to say, what do they need to do to correct things? And it's mismanagement is what it appears to be all the time. So what I'm really concerned about, Todd, is that, we have that election coming up in October, and we have Christine Kirchner along with Fernandez, and I think Fernandez is going to kick Marseille out, and Kirchner is going to be the vice president, and she's the one that has been always putting export taxes on commodities. She looks at farmers as being extremely rich people, and take it out of the farmer if you can. And so I don't know what's going to happen down there, but it has great implications for China being able to buy a lot of beans from them and farmers down there being willing to actually sell their commodities because they are very valuable. They're priced in U.S. dollars.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. I do appreciate it.
You bet. I thank you, Todd. Have a good one.
You too. That is Jackie Vick. She's with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media and Illinois Extension. Just a quick reminder that coming up on Friday morning of this week, the Farm Doc Daily team will be hosting a webinar on the ARC PLC decision. You might be able to get in on that yet if you'd like. The decisions between ARC and PLC will be covered in the webinar at 8 a.m. Farmers and landowners will need to make this decision by March the 15th of 2020. The decision made by then will be applicable to both the 2019 and the 2020 program years. You'll probably be making a different decision than last time around. However, Jonathan Kappas, Gary Schnittke, and Nick Paulson will walk you through that process. You can always register online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. That's the Farm Bill ARC and PLC program webinar. It is this Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. live. And you can always catch it after the fact. Visit farmdocdaily.illinois.edu for all of the details. In today's agricultural news, Politico is reporting that mass attrition at the Economic Research Service, otherwise known as the ERS, as a result of USDA's decision to move the agency out of Washington, will lead to significant delays in vital research projects. The memo, which was drafted by departmental management for planning purposes, outlines how widely the agency's work will be paralyzed as a result of the relocation. ERS conducts research into areas like climate change, nutrition, export data, and the farm economy. Due to the decreased staffing levels, ERS will for considerable time be unable to provide the same level and breadth of depth in its economic research and outlook analysis as it did in the past, the memo states. USDA identified 38 specific reports that may be delayed because staff members have departed. Asked to comment on the internal document, a USDA spokesperson said in a statement, quote, ERS has taken important action to ensure mission continuity and delivery of mission-critical work throughout the transition, and as a result, the agency is on track to complete its congressionally mandated projects. Separately, the Union for the Agency's Employees estimates that only 19 out of 280 employees chose to move, representing just 7% of the total staff. USDA has set a deadline of September 30th for the relocation. Now, let's stay in Washington, D.C., where U.S. President Donald Trump said today that a trade deal with China could happen sooner rather than later. Trump made the comment to reporters a day after delivering a stinging rebuke to China's trade practices at the United Nations General Assembly, saying then that he would not accept, quote, a bad deal in U.S.-China trade negotiations. And finally today, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue has issued the following statement regarding the signing of the new United States-Japan trade agreement. This agreement, he says, between the U.S. and Japan is a better deal for the entire U.S. economy, but it is a particularly big win for our American farmers and ranchers. The U.S.-Japan trade agreement will provide America's farmers and ranchers enhanced market access to its third largest agricultural export market. In the U.S.-Japan trade agreement, Japan has committed to provide substantial market access to American food and agricultural products by eliminating tariffs, enacting meaningful tariff reductions, or allowing a specific quantity of imports at a very low duty, generally zero. Importantly, the tariff treatment for products covered in this agreement will match the tariffs that Japan provides preferentially to countries in the CPTPP agreement. Out of the $14.1 billion in U.S. food and agricultural products, by the way, imported by Japan in 2018, $5.2 billion were already duty-free. Under this first-stage initial tariff agreement, Japan will eliminate or reduce tariffs on an additional $7.2 billion of U.S. food and agricultural products, and the agreement provides for the limited use of safeguards by Japan for surges in imports of beef, pork, whey, oranges, and racehorses, which will be phased out over time. Well, let's turn our attention on this Wednesday afternoon now to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here. He's at World Weather in Kansas City. I know you've been really busy because there's an interesting forecast, especially for the northwestern part of the growing regions of the United States and maybe part of Canada. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's definitely turning into a bigger mess. A lot of frustrated producers up there in the northern U.S. plains just from the wet bias we've had over this past 2 to 3 weeks. Really, not just the northern plains, but Canada's prairies as well as the upper U.S. Midwest. Just one rain event after the other. Well, now we're getting some cold air to come along, too, and we're going to perpetuate the wet bias at the same time. So we're going to change some of this rain to snow, and a very significant snow event at that for parts of Montana and Saskatchewan, Canada. Those areas late this weekend into early next week could get buried in multiple inches. In fact, we could see anywhere from 4 to about 10 inches of snow on the ground in some of that region, something greater. And it's really heavy, wet snow, which will flatten any unharvested crop, push it down to the ground, making harvesting even more difficult, and certainly raising more of a quality issue for some of that grain and oilseed up there. In the meantime, we will produce more rain across parts of the Midwest. The upper Midwest in particular, but the western Corn Belt too, will have to get at least two more rain events between now and when cooler and drier air will finally work its way into those areas. Now, the cold up in Canada, they will see temperatures dropping down well below freezing as we get into the weekend coming up. And some of that cold will come into the northern plains. I think we've got a very strong ridge of high pressure right now over the Midwest, and that is going to fight that cold air to the very last minute, and we will see this air mass moderate somewhat when we get to the middle and latter parts of next week. But we'll probably still see notable freezes in Montana, parts of western and northern North Dakota, and frost down to northwestern Nebraska, parts of South Dakota, and portions of Minnesota. All that will come in the middle to latter part of next week.
Well, that is the beginning of October. What do you see for the following 2 weeks?
Well, actually, good news, actually, as we go into that second week of the outlook, we will push the cooler and drier air through a big part of the Midwest, and that will certainly help to turn things around a little bit. We'll be coolish for a while, but it's still early in the season, so we'll still see those afternoon temperatures getting up to 60s and 70s, and that's going to be good. It'll be dry air. We should see the ground gradually dry down, and fieldwork will be able to slowly increase. So it looks really good at the second half of next week, on into that following weekend, and maybe on into the second week of October. I think we'll start seeing some precipitation returning in that second week of October, but it shouldn't go back to where we've been over these past few weeks.
It seems to me about August, or rather October 12, 15, 18, something like that, will be when the bulk of the combines try to get going, at least for corn. So that is good news. We've talked a lot about the Northwest. How about the Eastern Corn Belt?
Yeah, the situation in the Eastern Corn Belt is many times better. Of course, we haven't seen nearly the volume of rain there, and we have seen more consistency in warm biased conditions. So the crops are moving along okay. We're still, of course, way behind, but we're in a better environment there for drying down these crops than we have been in the western parts of the Corn Belt, and especially the upper Midwest. And as we go forward through this next week, that area, Ohio, Kentucky, portions of southern and eastern Indiana, will probably still see a much less bias for rainfall than the rest of the Corn Belt. They'll still get a few showers, but it won't be nearly as persistently wet, and there will still be a warm bias all the way into the first part of next week, so it's really not a bad scenario for some of those areas. Illinois, Michigan, northwest Indiana, that's a different story. They will see quite a bit of moisture coming up before the cool air finally comes along, but by this time next week, we'll be in a better situation for most of those areas as well.
Before I let you go, can we get an update on South America?
Absolutely. Argentina still has a big dry issue, especially in the west, but even some of the southern areas, Buenos Aires, where a big part of the wheat crop is produced, that area needs moisture too. As we go forward through the next week, we'll see some showers in eastern Argentina, but the west is going to get spit and spat at, and that's about as good as it's going to get for a while, so it's going to raise concern about that wheat crop. It's also going to delay some of the early sunseed and corn planting that normally begins about now. In Brazil, we're seeing an opportunity for rain to occur right now, today, tomorrow, and perhaps on Friday. We're going to have some showers and thunderstorms from Mato Grosso right on into São Paulo and Minas Gerais, maybe a part of Paraná as well. And all of these areas will see a temporary increase in topsoil moisture for some improved planting. But next week looks to get hot and dry again, so we'll be looking for more rain a little later in October.
We'll check with you again next week to see how they've done. Hey, thanks so much.
You bet. Have a good week.
You too. That is Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated.